The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. As you can see, Stephen A. is off today. We gave him a day, burned the candles on both ends, took the red eye, et cetera, held it down yesterday. But we've got you covered. Look at this crew. Tim Legler in the building. J.J. Reddick, good morning. Keyshawn Johnson from the West Coast. Fellas, how we feeling? How we living?
Fantastic. Glad to be doing a segment with this guy. This is fun.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no.
This is unbelievable. This never happened.
No.
This is great.
I love it. I love it. Bringing the band back together. Let's get it. We're talking playoffs. The Miami Heat take game one from the Philadelphia 76ers 106-92 without their best player, Joel Embiid, who sidelined at least the first two games with an orbital fracture. Tobias Harris led the Sixers 27 points, while James Harden finished with 16 points on 5 of 13 shooting, running his streak of being held under 25 points to 11 straight playoff games. His longest since he was coming off the bench with Oklahoma City Thunder to start his career. Tyler Hero finished with a team high 25 for Miami. Bam Adebayo added 24 points, 12 rebounds. James Harden, though, fellas, he's staying optimistic.
It's one game, but things can turn fast. So, you know, the sooner we can correct the things that we can control, the better off we'll be. Obviously, we're missing Joe, but, you know, it's out of our control, and we got to go out there and man up and be great. And I know we will do because we've been resilient, you know, so far.
J.J. Redick up first. Do you expect more from Harden without Embiid?
I don't know why we would expect more from Harden. He's shown over the last year and change that this is the player he is. But at this point of his career, he's a facilitator. He's a playmaker. But he is not the volume scorer that we saw in Houston. And to me, the adjustment is not for James to look to score more. They had a lot of success when they went small and they attacked. They couldn't buy a three-point bucket, and they also had a lot of success when they went to that zone. 23 possessions in zone last night, 0.65 points per possession. The 71 possessions in half court and man, Miami scored 1.13 points per possession. So to me, this is more about let's adjust the lineup a little bit. DeAndre Jordan, as much as I love him, a dear friend at this point, I don't think he should be starting in a playoff game. Start Paul Reed, and then at times go small with Tobias Harris and George Niang out on the court. Spread them out, give Harden space, give Maxey space, give Tobias Harris space, and shoot threes.
That's such a breath of fresh air. I've been saying it for 6 weeks, and I don't know why people are having such a hard time, JJ, like buying into, I guess this is just what it's going to be. You know, you look at James Harden over the last 6 weeks, but really focus in on the last month. Mm-hmm. James Harden hasn't had one game in which he had the same number of points as his career playoff average, which was 23 points a game. Not once, in 13 straight games. He doesn't win that matchup that's in front of him anymore to the extent that he did. Now, those guys ride his hip a little longer. Even guys like P.J. Tucker, who's a great defender. P.J. Tucker is not a laterally quick guy. He's a strong guy. So when James Harden gets a switch like he did last night with P.J. Tucker on him, 28, 30 feet from the basket, you know, 3 years ago, that's a back and forth six times, go to your left hand, and that guy's in your rearview mirror. And now it's, let me get into the paint and now wreak havoc with my passing or my scoring ability. He didn't win that matchup. He didn't win matchups last night when he got switches with Strus on him, with Bam Adebayo at 30 feet from the basket. His inability to beat that guy, to me, that's all predicating now why James Harden looks the way he does. And that's not going to change night to night, especially without Embiid, because yeah. Miami's got guys sitting in his lap. They're just waiting. They're daring Danny Green and Niang and Korkmaz. Go ahead. Can you guys make shots to beat us? If so, we'll adjust to that. Last night, to JJ's point, 6 for 34 from the three. You're not helping James Harden at all if you're not making shots as role players. But it all gets back to the same point. Physically, he is just not the same. He does not have the burst to win that matchup that's in front of him that set up his entire game. And those step back threes aren't going in as frequently either because not as much lift, more contested. Yeah. It's just, and he's an inefficient player right now offensively. And people just want him to go get 35 because that's who James Harden is. It's not there right now.
I want to come back to that in a minute, but I want to hear from you.
both of you guys were deadly shooters when you played. There's no question about it. And you had to have certain guys do certain things for you to be able to get your shots up. But could it be such, and we watched James Harden in the closeout game last series that he was in, he looked pretty good to me. But could it be more Doc Rivers and what he's asking him to do and less James Harden? Because if you go back last year, prior to him in and out of the lineup in Brooklyn, he was cooking with Mike D'Antoni on the sideline. So I'm looking at it, and when you go back to Houston, I heard you mention it, JJ, that he hasn't been the same guy since probably his Houston days. Well, who was on the bench coaching him in Houston when he was really cooking like that? It was Mike D'Antoni. So is this more Doc Rivers' system in the situation in which he want to play? You also mentioned DeAndre Jordan. We love him. There's no question about it. But the lineup, the way he is rotating guys, the way he's mixing things up, if he decided to go small and do some of the things that we saw him do in Houston or early in Brooklyn, could this be a difference for James Harden in Philadelphia?
One thing I just want to ask you quickly, and then we'll get back to the game in this series, because when you brought up him losing a step. Now, obviously, I'm not going to say was this trade a mistake, because we saw how it ended on the Ben Simmons side of things. But do you think it's the right move to assign him to a long-term extension? He's the right fit there in Philly now that we're seeing how this plays out when he needs to step up.
I'd have a tough time, but that's not the way the NBA works, unfortunately. He's going to get his money. And, you know, would I feel comfortable giving him $200+ million going into the deal, JJ, the way he looks right now? I mean, that's a very difficult thing to live with. Now, fortunately for Philly, he's not their best player. You know, if he was the best player, then absolutely not. You can't do it. He's not. Joel Embiid is. So you're hoping James Harden can be a good enough version of who he is at this stage of his career? People in Philadelphia, believe me, are debating this on a daily basis because I'm listening to it every single day when I'm down there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people now are falling on the side of, based on the way he looks right now, how could you possibly commit that kind of money to him? I always say this, what's your alternative solution then? Because you have to have something to come in there that's better than this.
Yep.
And that's, listen, this is above my pay grade, JJ. That's why Daryl Morey gets paid a lot of money to have to make that decision. But I think the way the NBA works typically, they're going to give him the money. They went through all this to get him, yeah, right? They're going to make that offer.
I totally agree with you. I would expect him to re-sign in Philly on a long-term deal. Maybe it's not that five-year, 250 supermax extension that he's eligible for, but he's going to sign a long deal, and he's going to get paid a lot of money. To Keyshawn's point, you know, I said, Keyshawn, you know, for the last year and change, and really, to me, we saw him play great basketball, MVP-level basketball, prior to his hamstring injury. To Tim's point, he has not looked the same since that injury. He does lack that burst. So it's not a matter of Doc Rivers' system. To me, I can just watch the game. He is struggling to get by guys. His blow-by rate is basically cut by 2.5 right now. He's struggling to get by guys. And the other word that Legs used that I thought was just the perfect encapsulation is inefficiency. Like, he's not an inefficient playmaker. He's not an inefficient facilitator. But he is an inefficient scorer. He struggles to make twos. He can't make a floater right now. And those step-back threes aren't going in.
But when you say struggling to blow by guys, why? Because of the hamstring injury?
Well, let's acknowledge the fact that he's 13 years in the league. Uh-huh. He's got a ton of miles on his body. He's had deep playoff runs. And a lot has been asked of him in his career, especially once he left OKC. He's had the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah.
There's a metric that, you know, we're tracked every single game, every single play. There's cameras all over the arena. There's a top speed metric. It's one of the things they measure. Average speed, top speed. You know, James Harden, when he was in Houston, his top speed in a given game, a given year, was somewhere between 18.5 and 19 miles per hour. And over the last year and a half, that top speed is now 16 miles per hour. So, yeah, maybe it is he's lost a little bit of that burst.
I just got to say one thing, because I sat on the show when this trade happened, and people were saying this might be the most dynamic duo ever. And obviously he doesn't have Joel Embiid, so it's not fair to fully judge it. But this is not the most dynamic duo. This is not what we were expecting to see when this blockbuster trade happened. But tell me this. The Sixers were leading at the half. What changed?
For me, it was Miami just at halftime. Mm-hmm. I think Eric Spoelstra, I'd love to have been in there to hear what he had to say to his team, because I thought they, second quarter, they were not playing very physically defensively. They were not committing the extra energy they had to against a team shorthanded like this. You saw that in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Herro came in, his offense kind of separated the two teams. But for me, it was really just a focus on the part of Miami to dig in and dive in. And I think James Harden got a little bit tired. He took four shots in the second half because he's not capable of carrying that burden. I saw him last night pick the ball up off a ball screen where no one really jumped out on him. He had space and he just picked it up and threw a cross-court pass that was intercepted. You know what that is? That's fatigue. That's mental and physical fatigue. And it's knowing I don't really know how to do this right now. Like, I can't go get people. I heard people say he needed to take 25 shots. Well, no, to JJ's point. So he was 5 for 13. Do you know what 25 shots would have looked like?
Yeah.
It would have looked like 9 for 25. That's what it would have looked like. And he knows that. And so as a result, he's trying to balance playmaking and scoring. The problem is right now, without Embiid, they don't have other guys on the roster except for probably Maxey. And I said going into the game last night, if we're talking about James Harden first.
You did.
I said that's a bad sign if he's the headline.
You said we have to be talking
if
about Maxey.
If Maxey's the headline, it's a great sign. Because the only reason Maxey would be the headline is because he went for 35, played out of his mind, and helped them maybe get a win or at least hang tight late.
Yeah.
We didn't. We talked about James Harden first, which meant he didn't play well. And that's a really bad sign for the Sixers because they just don't have that kind of depth to make up for that. So 25 shots isn't the answer because, like, to JJ's point, they're not going to be quality shots. They're not going to be efficient shots. He knows it. It's a bad space right now for James Harden to try to figure this out without Joel Embiid.
Key, is it
over? I think when you look at it, the Sixers, you can surely see how much they miss their potential MVP by not being in the lineup. You talked about Maxey. Maxey can get his shots off and do certain things with Embiid on the floor, but maybe that's not the case with James Harden. And from the way I look at it, this thing could be over in five if Embiid doesn't hurry up and get back.
You guys think it's over?
Yeah, definitely. They don't win a game in this series that Embiid doesn't play. So, you know, you're talking about you lose two.
Yeah.
All right, you say, okay, well, now we're going home. But the problem is now you're talking about beating the number one seed four out of five times. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're going to have a hard time winning this series without Joel being back for at least game three.
Sounds like you're keeping a little hope alive, though. A smidge?
It's sports. Anything can happen.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But do I think I said this before the series. I think even with Joel Embiid, I think this is a bad matchup for Philly, and Miami's the better team.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to the other one in the East. Boston didn't defend home court in game one versus Giannis and the Bucks, struggling on offense as the Bucks forced the Seas to attempt 53-pointers, making only 18. Game two tonight as Boston could be without the defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart, who's listed as questionable with a thigh contusion. Obviously, this is a huge hit. Keyshawn, do you think Boston can take game two at home without Smart?
I don't. In Boston, the Bucks didn't even play well in game one. Giannis didn't have a great game. He had a really good game, but did not have the MVP Giannis game that we are accustomed to seeing come playoff time. So I don't think so at all. And on top of that, when you got Jrue Holiday giving you 25 points and stepping up much like he's done throughout the playoffs when he's been in the playoffs, this is something that you continue to see. He's like a big playoff type. You know how they say playoff Rondo? I'm starting to say playoff Holiday to a degree. I just don't think that when you lose a defender like Marcus Smart, you lose a lot.
JJ?
I do think the Celtics can win game two, even if Smart doesn't play. Let's take a look at sort of what happened in game one. Everybody talks about Boston's defense. We've talked about that since the calendar turned. The Bucks have been the best defensive team in the playoffs, and it's not particularly close. And so they're giving Jason Tatum problems, Jaylen Brown problems with their size and length. When Lopez or Giannis contested a shot in game one, the Celtics shot 3 for 20, 2 for 15 on two-pointers. The Bucks defense is meant to pack the paint.
Yeah.
And so the Celtics shot 53s in game one. To me, they've just got to embrace that. Let's fire away. Let's not challenge Giannis. Let's not challenge Lopez. Let's not challenge Portis at the rim. Yes, you need to attack to draw in defenders, but the Bucks are going to give up threes, embrace that, shoot 60 of them.
I agree that they're going to shoot a lot of threes in the series because of the length back there. And I remember I did a game earlier this year in Bucks, and I hadn't seen Brook Lopez in person in a while. And I walked past him in the tunnel, JJ, and I was like, I forgot, like, what a mountain of a human being is, right? And then you got Giannis. So what that looks like to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, it doesn't look great. Your prospects are getting to the rim, and that's a big part of their game. So the threes are going to be there, but here's what I think they can do. They were taking some quick ones off that initial action, pull up, shoot it. Your one pass up the floor in transition, shoot it with a guy closing out on them. I do think, and it's the numbers bear it out, when they had even one ball reversal, they were 60% more efficient in their offense. So rather than just come up one side, attack strong side, stay strong side, first action, that's a shot. Let's see if we can come off the first action, reverse it, get it to the other side. Now some of those big guys, Portis, Brooke, Giannis, now you got them in a closeout situation. Maybe that's a better opportunity for Tatum or Brown to get into a little mid-range game. Or maybe now you can get by Giannis at 25 closing out because the ball was reversed and you can get all the way to the rim. I just felt like they were a little bit predictable in their attack and settling pretty quickly for those three-point shots. But there's no way around it. Milwaukee's going to make you take high numbers of threes in this series.
Yep.
Much like you just said, though, Legs, instead of taking all those threes, why play into the hand of the defense that Milwaukee wants you to? Move right around them, get to the cup, create fouls, put those guys in foul trouble, because you know if you're going to the rim, you're going to get fouled. But if you're sitting up trying to shoot 50, 55 threes and you only make it a small clip of them, you're going to lose the game and you're going to lose it in a fashion just like you did the other night.
Key, did you hear the stats that I just said? 2 for 15 on twos. That's not going to win you an NBA playoff game. This is the Bucks defense is a heavy drop coverage. They were one of the first teams, along with the Utah Jazz with Gobert, to really embrace drop coverage. Lopez stays all the way back in pick and roll. And one of the hard parts, and I've lived it as a player, one of the hard parts in drop coverage is when you come off that initial action and you get any semblance of a screen on the ball, you're coming off fairly wide open. And it's very hard not to shoot that rhythm pull-up. And a lot of them were threes. It's very hard not to shoot that shot. And that, to your point, Legs, that is playing right into the Bucks' hand because they have the size, they have the length to get those rear-view contests. I don't think the answer is to attack at the rim Lopez, Giannis, Portis. It's just too much size.
I think for me, Boston is going to be better offensively.
Yeah. Tell me what do you expect tonight?
They've got a problem on the other end. Well, listen, I think Boston's going to be better. There's no question. Jaylen Brown's going to be much better. Yeah. He was non-existent offensive player. He's an all-star.
Yeah.
He'll be a lot better. Tatum,
so,
I think the problem's the other end of the floor. What do you do with Giannis? That's the worst game Giannis will have in this series offensively.
Yeah.
And he was by far the best player on the court. That's a problem for Boston. Now, their three-point shooters stepped up in a huge way. Connaughton, Grayson Allen, Drew Holiday, Portis, all of those guys did their share, but it's all created by Giannis because Boston can't affect him the way they affected Kevin Durant by getting into his chest, sending a second guy. Giannis plays through all that stuff. He's still in the paint. And now it's a matter of, I'm going to take these passes you're giving me. If they make shots, you got a real problem on your hand now because now you're one step closer. I'm at the rim, and that's kind of the game plan. I think Boston's going to have a difficult time making Giannis as inefficient as you need to be to win the series. He's just too big, physical, and too good.
But you have to get tonight at home. Key, I know you're trying to jump in. What were you saying?
Now, I was going to ask JJ, when they're doing the drop coverage and you got that pull-up three right there and you say you hesitant to not take that shot, why not put the ball on the floor and force yourself to go to the cup and create that foul opportunity to get those dudes in foul trouble to get them off the court?
I understand what you're saying, Key, but let's say you're playing in the playoffs. Again, playoffs are matchup dependent. The Bucks' strength is protecting the rim.
Their
weakness is giving up threes. And this is a lot about scheme, and it's also a lot about personnel. Again, the size they have. But let's say you're playing in a playoff game in the NFL, and you have two lockdown defenders, and the entire season, their passing coverage is the best in the league. But you can run the ball against them. Are you going to continue to challenge the cornerbacks? No, you're going to run the ball. That's what they're willing to give up. You take that, you embrace that. That's their weakness.
Is the winner of this game winning the series?
I think Milwaukee's winning the series regardless, in my opinion. They needed to get a split there.
Yeah.
And they've already accomplished that. They might go back too. Well, I'm not going to be shocked Milwaukee wins this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I picked them to win the series because of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's just a differentiating factor. You can't do enough to make him have the kind of nights you need to give yourself a chance, particularly if Drew Holiday's playing like this. You know, Key pointed it out. That stretch when Giannis got his fourth foul, yeah. and you saw Budenholzer look like he just ate, you know, some bad seafood, the look on his face, because he's like, I got to play 9 more minutes. Mm-hmm. This guy's got 4 fouls. It's a 6-point game. Jrue Holiday took over the game. He ran the show for the next 4 minutes. So if he's playing at an all-star level, even without Middleton, it's because of Giannis. I have that much faith in how different and unique he is, even for an elite-level defensive
ball. Is Giannis the best player in the game right now, JJ? I'm just going there because we're just hyping this man up. I know you love these questions. I know you love going viral and being put on the record, especially coming off Kevin Durant's performance. I mean, just talk to me. Let's just go there right now.
Listen, I want to give a little bit of backdrop because the Milwaukee Bucks fans all hate me right now and they think I'm a Giannis hater. So when I had Joel Embiid on my podcast, I was trying to give Joel a compliment by calling him and Kevin Durant two of the three best players in the world. Now, Joel is smart and he's a bit of a jerk, so he put me, he boxed me into a corner and said, well, who's the third guy? So in my brain, I'm thinking, well, if I say Giannis, then every Jokic and Nugget fan is going to hate me. And if I say Jokic, then every Bucks Giannis fan. And in the second, in the moment, I said Jokic. So now everybody thinks I'm a Giannis hater.
You know what's your problem?
The answer,
you're worried about what other people think.
No, listen, the answer is absolutely. Giannis is the best player in basketball right now.
That was easy, though, JJ. You could answer that real easy.
Look, but here's the thing.
People-pleasing.
To me, there's – in any given season, it seems like there's probably four-ish guys that you could make the case at a given point that they're the best player in the world.
I always talk
and
about
right now,
seats at the table.
But it's a unanimous decision right now here on this
right
show.
Right now, Giannis is the best player in the world. Giannis is the best player in the world right now.
Best player in the world, yes.
0-10. He hasn't let up. There's nobody – even the easier case is when you talk about KD versus him, who's still playing?
Yeah, no, true. Okay, I know I'm not supposed to go there, but now I just have to because I'm curious. So, Key, so you think they're getting past Miami too then?
Is Milwaukee going to get past – Miami. Miami got tough defense too, though. So now you're dealing with that all over again. I think so. I do. Honestly, because I don't think Miami offensive scoring is going to be able to match the Bucks offensive scoring. And you guys will know better than me from an NBA standpoint, but just from my eyeballs telling me, Tyler Hero had a great game off the bench last night, 25 points. But can he consistently do that, or is that a one-off?
Yeah. So just want to be clear. So Stephen A. will be in Milwaukee in June, right?
Oh, yeah,
definitely. Because he wants bratwurst.
And let me tell you something
right now.
I'm having bratwurst delivered to his room. As soon as I find out what room he's in, he's getting the biggest tray of bratwurst you've ever seen. And you're like, Milwaukee's beautiful in the summertime.
Yeah, I'm sure. I haven't been. I'm waiting.
It's not bad in the summer.
I
remember those trips
now.
In the winter weren't a lot of fun.
But that matchup, you tell me, are they blowing past Miami?
I picked Milwaukee a couple months ago to win East.
Okay.
I think they're going to win East, and I picked Golden State to win it all a month into the season. And then I backtracked because of all the injuries, and I'm now convinced once again it's Golden State, Milwaukee. I know that's maybe blasphemous the way Phoenix looked last night. I think it's going to be Golden State, Milwaukee in the finals. So, yeah, I think Milwaukee wins the East.
I've been saying this for a few months now. It has felt since basically January, and that's even with the Celtics playing at the level they've played since January, that we're headed for a finals rematch from last year. And I think it'll be Bucks and Suns. Look, Golden State is great, and I expect them to beat Memphis. Mm-hmm. I expect that next series to be phenomenal. But we should not sort of overlook just how good the Phoenix Suns have been season.
Let's go there now then. I want to talk about that one. So the Suns took game one against the Mavs in their second round series with a 121-114 win. Every Suns starter scored in double figures, led by DeAndre Ayton's 25 points compared to only 3 starters for the Mavs. Dallas did get 45 from Luka, Jalen Brunson, Spencer Dinwiddie combined for only 21 on 9 of 24 shooting. Now, according to Caesars, the Suns are currently tied with the Warriors for the best odds to win the championship. Phoenix looking to make it back to the NBA Finals for the second straight season. What is standing in the way of CP3 and the Suns franchise notching their first ever championship legs?
The only two things that could stand in the way, and it does feel like Phoenix's year, I agree with Jay, it does feel that way, are the greatness of the Warriors, the greatness of Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, to answer your question, that's the only two things, because they're going to win this series. Mm-hmm. I do think Dallas has a chance to get a couple of games, maybe one game, maybe two. Phoenix will win this series. Phoenix, Golden State, I just said I think Golden State is going to the finals. I mean, that's a great team. that now has a guy, to me, the emergence of Jordan Poole, what he has done to the Warriors. You think about it. Andrew Wiggins made the All-Star team this year. There are nights right now that Andrew Wiggins is their fifth best player because of the way Jordan Poole's playing. Think about that. That's how deep they are right now with talent. Could Phoenix beat them? Of course they could beat them. They're the number one seed. Obviously, they've been the best team in the league. So I'm not going to be shocked whichever way that goes, whichever one of those teams get to the finals. Mm-hmm. But for me, what's it going to take? It's going to take Giannis Antetokounmpo being incredibly special in the NBA Finals, or it's going to take Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Wiggins, and then Jordan Poole, who's now scoring at an elite level. It's going to take something like that because Phoenix is a complete team across the board.
I'm going to go Key next.
All right.
Key, what's standing in the way of the Suns?
I echo pretty much what Legs is saying. When you think about it, I start off with Golden State and everything that they've been able to do. Steph Curry came back off an ankle injury and hadn't missed a beat. Klay Thompson's been in and out, you know, a little rusty, but yet and still more than what you expected. Now, if Draymond can keep his head screwed on straight and not get himself caught in the situations in the playoffs where he's eliminated, but then the X factor to me is Jordan Poole. Now you've got about 3 to 4 guys on Golden State that can cook. Now when you look at Phoenix on the other hand, yeah, they got 3 guys last night that all scored in the 20s, but is DeAndre Ayton still going to be able to do that? Is Chris Paul on a night in and night out going to be able to do that? Well, Booker came back. It just tells me he willed his way coming back off a hamstring injury because that's how bad he wanted it early. I think he can continue to do that. But then when you flip to the East, do they have anybody? Can DeAndre Ayton, we saw him last year, handle Giannis if somehow they get to the finals? Can he somehow defend that? Nobody's been able to defend it so far. He wasn't able to defend it last year. Are we going to see the same sort of repeat that we saw last year with Phoenix in Milwaukee?
Yeah, if it ends up being Bucks Suns, Giannis, obviously, best player in the world. Bucks fans, I'm going to repeat it. Leave me alone. Please leave me alone. Seriously. Giannis is the best player in the world. But that's going to be a hard matchup for Phoenix. You guys said it. Look, Warriors in the West, that's standing between the Suns and their first title. The winner of the Bucks-Celtics series, to me, is standing. You know, that's going to be a tough matchup either way. Whoever wins that series, I think, will win the East. The other part is you can't quantify it. You can't measure it. It's just luck. And when we think about CP specifically and all the bad luck that he's had in the playoffs, even – you know, we can go back to Houston. We can go back to the Clippers years. That fourth quarter against the Spurs back in 08. Like, there's been some just really bad moments, and they've been unlucky. Last year, he hurts his shoulder. He's unable to shoot in the first round against the Lakers. They figure out a way to beat them. Then in the conference finals, he gets COVID. He's out 2 games. This year, Book gets hurt. Like, so much of winning a championship, and Doc Rivers said this back in 2015 or 2016, and the Warriors got mad. There is an element of luck or avoiding unluckiness that is involved with winning a championship.
Luck,
it happens
or
every year. Well,
you think they go
you
hand
can,
in
you
hand?
You can, like, CP does everything in the world to take care of his body.
Yeah.
I talk to him about this all the time. Guess what? He reaches for steals and strip downs 5-6 times a game. Every time he does that, he's at danger of breaking his thumb, breaking a finger, breaking his wrist. It's just part of the thing. But he's going to continue to play that way. So some of it is just avoiding bad luck.
Just perfect example. Just ask Philly. Joel Embiid's face was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now look what that potentially does.
When they were up by 29 points?
They were 29. By 29. And Doc's getting a lot of heat for that, but I'm also kind of questioning Joel Embiid for even sliding over there to contest that layup. Just don't.
Hold on.
He already has the thumb thing. I'm not putting it on Doc. I'm just saying they're up 29 points.
But we should address this because Doc Rivers, for 3 days or 2 days, whatever it was between the games, as soon as it got 3-1, 3-2, all the media was talking about, will Doc Rivers be the first coach to blow a 3-0 lead? That's all he heard. Every single question was about that. So if he takes his guys out and Toronto comes back, guess what? He loses. If he leaves his guys in and someone gets hurt,
but
he
really,
loses.
But really, could you go on a run when you're up by 29 with 4 minutes left? Is that really realistic, JJ? I mean,
I'm just saying he's in a position right now where he's going to get killed no matter what. That's the nature of it.
You talk about luck. So 40 seconds before that happened, they got a defensive rebound.
Okay.
Doc could have called timeout then. He decided, all right, you know, one more trip. Joel goes down, dunks the ball, does his jet thing down the court. He's getting the booze. Siakam comes right at him. Embiid slides over, kind of, he's like in no man's land, so he doesn't really commit to the block, and he's not trying to take a charge, and he's just in a bad place, wrong time.
Yeah.
And Doc Rivers gets heat for that, for literally changing into the floor one more time. And that's just not fair to Doc Rivers, honestly. The one thing I'll disagree with Doc, when he said, well, they still had their guys in. Yeah, but typically when you're up 29, you usually put your guys in first. And then Nick Nurse would pull his guys 2 minutes later. That's usually the way it works. The team that's behind keeps their guys in a little bit longer when you talk about end-of-game blowout protocol, right? So that's the one thing I'll disagree with.
Especially in a closeout game.
Yes.
Especially in a closeout game.
Completely.
Yeah.
Okay. The headline of the segment, Giannis is the best player in the NBA. Heard it here first. Staying in the desert, you guys sit tight. Keyshawn and I got to deal with some NFL here. Arizona Cardinals star wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins has been suspended 6 games for violating the NFL's policy on performance-enhancing drugs. The league announced Monday the suspension comes after the Cardinals traded their first-round pick in the 2022 draft to the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday for wide receiver Marquise Hollywood Brown. Hopkins will be allowed to play during the preseason and practice with the team until the beginning of the 2022 regular season, including the playoffs. Kyler had a win-loss record of 8-2. When Hopkins was active, 1-4 when he was out. Oh, look who decided to show up. Can't wait for a visit from Bart Scott.
What
here he is.
Was.
How we doing?
I'm good. What's up, Keyshawn? How you
Hello
doing,
there.
Pleasure. Okay. Top of the morning to you, buddy. Oh, I know it's real early
okay.
out there.
Okay, we're going to talk in that voice. I see what this is. Keyshawn, can Arizona make the playoffs despite the D-Hop suspension? Because we know how important diva wide receivers are.
All right, here you go, Molly, with the shots. But I'm going to leave that alone. No, I don't think they can make the playoffs at all. I think you just said in the record they're 1-4 with DeAndre Hopkins out of the lineup. So when you look at that, look at the rest of the numbers. Kyler Murray's QBR is down. Everything is down from the Arizona Cardinals when DeAndre Hopkins is not in the lineup. He is the reason that passing game goes. He is the reason A.J. Green was getting single coverage throughout last season. He is the reason Christian Kirk was able to go get the bag from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Kyler Murray looked like a totally different player when his number one target was not on the football field. That offense looked sort of stale. They tried to do it in different variations. It just did not work. And I don't believe in that division when you have the Rams, the 49ers, and I really don't know what Seattle's going to look like, but I'm not going to count them out. Even though Russell Wilson isn't there, they still have Pete Carroll. They're not giving up in Seattle. They're not rebuilding in Seattle. They're just fine-tuning some things. So when you look at that, what is the Arizona Cardinals? Kyler Murray's going to have a lot of pressure on him to prove that he's worth the money that they're going to give him this summer. He'll get his money. It won't affect him. He'll get paid this summer before he takes a snap in the fall. But then everyone will say, it's time for you to put this on your shoulders and win. Without DeAndre Hopkins in the lineup, Molly, I just don't see it happening.
I mean, Keyshawn, you hit the nail right on the head, right? This is an opportunity, not only for Kyler Murray, but, you know, Shake and Bake is back, right? So now he has Hollywood Brown, his college roommate, maybe his college teammate that he had tremendous success with. So, I mean, maybe this was foreshadowing. Maybe they understood and they knew that DeAndre Hopkins was going to be suspended. So he went out and made a trade for a supposed number one receiver that had 1,000 yards last year. You would say that maybe he's a slight upgrade from Christian Kirk. See, the difference is when DeAndre Hopkins got hurt during the season, they couldn't prepare for it. So now they'll have a game plan that's based. Now, listen, we don't know what San Francisco is going to be because we don't know the fate of Jimmy G. We don't know if Deebo Samuel is going to have a hold-in. So it's a lot of things going over in San Francisco. And then when you look at Seattle, we have no idea what they're going to be. In this era, in this time, Keyshawn, everybody goes to the playoffs, right? You talk about the New Orleans Saints were still involved in maybe potentially going to the playoffs, you know, at 9-8. Because of the extra game, because of the extra team, you know, it's going to be more people have an opportunity. And when you talk about the NFC, it's not that great of a team. Now, what happens, a team has to graduate. Right? A lot of players have to graduate. Isaiah Simmons has to be better, right? J.J. Watt has to come back and be a leader that they paid him to be because he's not the player that he used to be. And also, Zaven Collins, one of their high draft picks that they let Hicks go for, has to step up and graduate. Can they do it? But, you know, I think they can because everybody gets in. But this is an opportunity for Hollywood Brown to get his money because he left a place where he was targeted 143 times. So it's put up or shut up time, but I think ultimately they can squeak their way into the playoffs, which isn't saying much nowadays.
Key, can
well,
I just
no
jump
matter,
in here
no
real
matter,
quick? Oh, go
no
ahead, go
matter
ahead.
What you think about Hollywood Brown, he ain't DeAndre Hopkins.
No, not at all.
In a lot of different ways. I'm talking about from dictating the coverage in the secondary to people basically saying we're going to commit two guys on one person. That's not Hollywood Brown. Yes, he had a good season last year. I believe he was in the top five in drops in the National Football League a year ago. You dropping the football isn't helping. DeAndre Hopkins never puts the football on the ground. He is one of the most pure route runners in the National Football League. You're missing a lot when you miss a DeAndre Hopkins.
Of course.
On top of the heart and soul and the heartbeat of the passing attack for the Cardinals. Everything they did revolved around DeAndre Hopkins. Everything they did in the past.
Can I just ask a question really quick?
Please.
Because, guys, don't you remember last year Arizona was head and shoulders above everybody else? They had a world beater record, and then as we got down the stretch, right, they started to fall apart. And I understand DeAndre Hopkins got hurt, but what happened to that team?
Well, that team lost its identity. They got too pass happy, and then they tried to make a pivot during the season, becoming a run team, and kind of have some physicality. They made the trade for Zach Ertz, and things changed, right? They drafted McBride. So you can't replace DeAndre Hopkins with one player, but they're going to try and replace him with four. You know, A.J. Green has to be better. They have to have a better connection. Now, he's not what he used to be, but you think about Zach Ertz, he's a guy that can get open. I think they probably go with a two tight end set and try and break the formations with the kid McBride that they drafted. James Conner was a beast for them last year. So they have an opportunity just to win ugly. They only have to hold the fort for six games before he's able to come back and contribute. And I think in this weak division, all the good players, or most of the great players, are in the AFC.
Man, how you gonna call it a weak division when the people that won the Super Bowl is in the division?
The team that was in the
NFC Championship game that lost to the Super Bowl winners were in the division. How is that weak?
But
what I'm saying is the path
there is differently, right? We're going to see what the Rams are without, you know, their all-pro left tackle, borderline Hall of Famer. They have some issues as well. Now, listen, they upgraded, but I'm not talking about them winning the division. I'm talking about them getting into the playoffs. That's a totally different thing.
They could get into the playoffs as a seventh seed.
That's all I'm saying.
Did you not understand the words that were coming out of my mouth? That's an easy layup. But guess what? So can the New Orleans Saints. So can the Green Bay Packers, the Minnesota Vikings.
What's the next question? Why did you jump on him?
I'm talking about a real playoff team,
but the NFC West isn't as strong as it was, Keyshawn. That's a fair statement.
I don't know that it's not. Why isn't it strong?
Because
Russell Wilson's not there anymore. We don't know what the Niners are doing.
Seattle wasn't anything last year anyway. They faded and completely went.
The 49ers team
is still intact. We don't know what's going to happen with Deebo Samuel. Most likely, he'll still be there. They'll talk to him the right way. Excuse me? That's a big deal.
And then if you go with Trey Lance, have you heard the reports coming out of practice about him?
I heard he's doing pretty well, me personally.
Yeah, they throwing on air, Keyshawn. They still hold on to Jimmy G for a reason.
All they could do is go off of what they see in practice. And I heard he's doing pretty well.
Practice?
And Jimmy G is still there
practice.
Because they want too much for Jimmy G and nobody will give it to him. So, therefore, he's sitting tight right now. And then the Rams won the Super Bowl. I don't understand.
You can't be trying to hit me up with San Francisco.
Whitworth, the left tackle, was 1,000 years old. They replaced him. They got stronger at the receiver position with Allen Robinson. They got stronger there. Cooper Kupp is still there. OBJ most likely will be coming back. Jefferson is back.
I'm conceding the division to them.
Cam Akers is healthy. Aaron Donald, come on, Bart, man.
Listen, man. Which one of you got to take your ear thing out so you can understand what I'm saying, man. Like, I'm conceding the division to the Rams. But the question was, can they get to the playoffs? And how much pressure is on Kyler Murray? It's tremendous pressure. But if he wants to get paid to back, he has to show that he's as good as Lamar Jackson.
He never believed in Kyler Murray. He calls him Mighty Mouse.
I don't like Kyler Murray either. Yeah, right, let's get that straight.
But Keyshawn's always talked about him being a small quarterback. He doesn't believe in him. He calls him Mighty Mouse, and that's what it is. Let's just leave it. You don't have time to defend yourself.
Can't trust a man over 40 with no face.
You know what it is. I'm just regurgitating your takes.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back into First Take. The Miami Heat take game one from the Philadelphia 76ers 106-92 without their best player, Joel Embiid, who sidelined at least the first two games with an orbital fracture. Tobias Harris led the Sixers with 27 points, while James Harden finished with 16 points, 5 of 13 shooting, running a streak of being held under 25 points to 11 straight playoff games, his longest since he was coming off the bench for the Oklahoma City Thunder to start his career. Tyler Hero finished with a team-high 25 points, while Bam Adebayo added 24 points and 12 rebounds for the Heat. James Harden staying optimistic.
It's one game, but things can turn fast. So, you know, the sooner we can correct the things that we can control, the better off we'll be. Obviously, we're missing Joe, but, you know, it's out of our control, and we got to go out there and man up and be great. And I know we will do because we've been resilient, you know, so far.
And look who's joining us now, Cavs coach J.B. Bickerstaff. So great to have you, sir. An excellent season with that young starting squad. Really tremendous, tremendous job.
Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you. And we're going to revisit Harden. It has been over a half an hour, okay? So I know sometimes there's a statute of limitations how much I'm allowed to talk about things. J.J. Redick starts to give me the side eye. But you know Harden. You were with him in Houston. So tell me this. I'm interested from a coach's perspective. If you're Doc Rivers, how do you utilize Harden now without having Joel Embiid?
Well, you have to quickly make him as comfortable as you possibly can. And by doing that, you have to go back to when he was most successful. And you go back, you watch the film of when he was in Houston, mm-hmm. and you got to figure out how you can put him in those positions. And I'm sure Doc is. That team was full of shooters, so it gave him plenty of space. And then they played quickly and early in the shot clock. So you got to see if you can, how quickly you can get back to that and make him comfortable.
I want to be clear on one thing, Molly. The statute of limitations only applied to the Los Angeles Lakers because we were doing four segments a day in April when they had been eliminated from the playoffs. Okay. So I actually wanted to talk about the playoffs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So
have you heard of this guy named LeBron James?
No, I get
In case you haven't heard, he sells. And guess what? Tim Legler co-signs that because he was right there
the
with
me. The Nets had a long shelf life, too. I know JJ's talking about.
Gentlemen, there's a thing in the TV business called playing the hits. People aren't always sitting there for two straight hours. Work with a girl.
Yeah. Sweet Caroline.
Oldies, but goodies. Always, right? In case of the
always, right.
Yes. Do you want to piggyback any more so on what Coach was saying?
You know, one of the things we talked about in the first segment was just his inability at times to get by guys. So there was a great play that Houston used to run where he would throw it high post, get down to the right corner, set a little inverted screen for him, and he'd come off two screens getting to the left hand. Incorporating more of those sets, I think, will be helpful. And, again, he can make tons of plays. Going to his left hand, that left-hand pass, lob pass, pocket pass, back out to the three-point line. I think that's great. To me, the adjustment's got to be more lineup-based, and they need more shooting. I'll repeat what I said earlier. Tobias Harris and George Niang going small, playing them at the four and five, mixing in a bunch of zone, as I mentioned. You know, 71 offensive possessions in game one in the half court against man, 1.13 points per possession scored for the Heat. When they went zone on those 23 possessions, they only scored 0.65 points. So they had a lot of success with that zone. Now, the bad thing about a zone is very hard to match up on the offensive glass. And P.J. Tucker absolutely killed them last night. Bam Adebayo killed them last night on the offensive glass. So if you do go small to benefit James Harden, you also need to put an emphasis on the offensive glass.
Great. I think one of the things they can also do is maybe not make him the primary ball handler up the floor as often as he is. Because what happens is right now, James Harden, you go back to Houston days, right? It was always his ball, especially before Chris Paul got there. His ball, he comes up against a stagnant defense looking at him, five eyes on him. But he was so good and so explosive, it didn't matter. And he was making the step back three at a high enough rate that you had to get up on your toes and lean forward, and now he'd go by you again. He's not really capable of doing that at that level. So now what do? I think rather than come up the floor and you're looking at five sets of eyes, and whether you ISO or run one ball screen, they're obviously shading toward him. How about maybe give it up or let Maxey bring it up? Let Maxey create some action because he's certainly capable. Let Miami react to that. And now when the ball comes on a reversal, James is catching it with space with someone closing in him. Maybe that gives a little more of an opportunity to get into the paint. But I think if you're going to continue to let him bring the ball up the floor 40, 50 times a night with it at like three-quarter speed, getting over half court now looking at a defense this good with this kind of personnel locked into what you're about to do, and you're just not quite the same physically, I think that's a formula for another 20-point loss in game two.
Legs, how many times, though, have we seen James Harden off the ball in a spot-up position? The ball is kicked to him, and rather than quick shoot or quick catch and go, he waits for the defense to get to him and gets into his dribble package and goes ISO. Like, that's his game. I think starting him on the move, that allows him to create some inertia and try to get downhill, try to create space and make plays that way. You can't reprogram a guy two rounds into the playoffs, 13 years into his career. I understand the sentiment. And look, Maxey has got to be better. He's got to have the ball in his hands more. I get all that. But getting James Harden into some movement sets where he can create some inertia, I think, would be the way to go if I was Doc Rivers.
On top of that, like you were talking about the lineups, you put Tobias Harris at the five at the top of the floor, put James in that opposite corner. Now they've got to guard both guys. James comes off quickly to his left hand. They've got to make a decision on whether or not they want to switch that. Now you got Tobias Harris popping. You can throw it back. Now he can attack closeouts, and he's got the ability to roll. You can put the ball in him in the pocket, and then he can make the next play from there also.
Coach, while we have you, I want to go big picture. What chance do you give Miami to win the East?
I think they got a great shot at it. I think when we go back, they're built for this. And you watch them play in the regular season. You know, they don't play regular season style of basketball. The basketball they play is to prepare them for the playoffs. The playoffs, we always say it comes down to switches, right? How many guys on the floor can guard multiple positions? And then how many guys can go out and beat their man? That's something that they do all year. So they've prepared themselves. They're physically tough. They're mentally tough. They've got guys who can create, and they got guys that can shoot, so they give themselves a great chance.
And a great coach.
Eric Spoelstra is as smart as they come. And one thing I like about their team, you know, they have the luxury right now. You know, Kyle Lowry probably was ready to play last game. Mm-hmm. And they're going, well, wait a second. We've got Jimmy Butler. We've got Tyler Hero. We've got Bam Adebayo, who can handle the ball, run your offense through. They got Victor Oladipo playing now. Yeah. Gives them a little bit of luxury to buy some more time to make sure he doesn't see the floor again until he's physically ready to go beat Kyle Lowry, because he's a guy that's going to throw himself into the fray a lot. That's just the way he plays. So it lets them buy a little bit more time. But I love Spoelstra. I love their versatility defensively. Anybody going to be shocked that the number one seed ends up in the finals? Of course not. But, you know, if I had to lay money on it right now in Vegas, my money would go on Milwaukee.
I just want to make one point about the Eastern Conference playoffs. And this is a long-term trend over the last 5 or 6 years across the NBA. But the teams that have placed an emphasis on big two-way wings are the team, to your point about switchability, are the teams that are going to have the most success in the playoffs. We just saw Harden go against the Toronto Raptors with OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Scottie Barnes, big team. Milwaukee Bucks, big wings. Boston Celtics, big wings. For the Sixers, they don't have those big wings outside of Danny Green that can play both sides of the ball. Matisse Thybulle is their best wing defender, and he's a liability offensively, and I think that really hurts this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want you to know I could have worked LeBron in, because I know you don't like top-heavy rosters. I mean, argument he should finish his career in Cleveland, but I saved you from that, and I talked the playoffs.
That just means
I saved Coach.
You avoid some papers.
I really just saved Coach, let's be honest. But don't think I wasn't tempted, but I listened to direction. Coach, great to have you. Come back again soon. This is
appreciate
a lot of fun.
It. Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.